You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.
Hello, and out of the rubbish tip and straight to your ears is me, Amy, and I'd like to get started today by acknowledging the original sovereign owners of this land, the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people, and I'd like to acknowledge that their sovereignty is unceded and to pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging, and to any First Nations listening today.
Every form of discrimination that exists in our community is magnified and utilised by prisons to cause greater division and disarm solidarity.
We've got to really put a lens of perspective on this and know that there are children being incarcerated as young as 10 years old.
Police and prisons, they're doing exactly what this colony wants them to.
Who do we defend?
Police!
And who else? Prisons, pull them down!
Yay!
3CR, stay tuned, stay radical.
Now, getting on to today's episode. Today's episode, we're going to be starting off with a little bit from me that I'd like to share. I had a guest line up relating to NAIDOC Week, but unfortunately that didn't pull through, so we're just going to kind of share some thoughts on something that comes up around prisons. And then we're going to hear a bit more of that interview I played a couple weeks back with Willow Hutton on Mutual Aid. And then a return guest, David Border-Giles from the other week, joining him with Sonia to talk about a new installation and event coming up, which 3CR listeners might remember is related to homeless in hotels. So stay tuned for all of that. But let's get on with the first item of the day. Now, it being a week where we focus on this incarceration nation with the Beyond the Bars broadcast, I hope you've been listening. It's been fantastic as usual. I thought I would share some thoughts on some recent language I have learnt to describe something I see that relates both to the prison system and kicking down fences, which is the term carceral logics. I saw it used in an Instagram post, and instead of having 20 seconds becoming informed through 20 seconds of an Instagram post, I thought I'd pick up a book that seemed to be talking about it. And yeah, thanks to my friend Anna and her archive at annasarchive.com for helping me get access to that book. And the book is called Carceral Logics, Human Incarceration and Animal Captivity. And so obviously this is not specifically relating to the themes of the show, but it has informed me enough. I haven't finished the book yet. I'm getting my way through it. It is very interesting, and if you're interested in human rights and its relation and the and animal rights, I think it's actually quite an interesting book. So yeah, a bit of freedom of species, I guess, territory there. Another great 3CR show. But moving on, it's helped me understand carceral logics. And I'm going to start with a definition they use right off the bat in the introduction. And here's what they write. There are two distinct senses of carceral logics. One that we might think of as a narrower internal logic, the logic that orders the legal system, prisons, and other similar issues. And one that is broader, that shapes our understanding and analysis of social problems and solutions. We can think of the first sort of carceral logic as having its emphasis on the logic of carceral systems, the laws, rules, design, practices of courts, police, and prisons. The second sort of carceral logic emphasizes how the carceral and its practices inform, surveil, limit, and constrain our thinking in the contexts that go beyond prison. And I think we're going to really focus in this conversation on the thinking, the second part, which is how carceral logics inform our thinking and how we go about through life and engaging and relating to one another. Let's start. I'm going to use a few examples to just sort of illustrate why I think it's an interesting topic. And I have some examples that I've applied it to in my own life. So I'm going to start with my industry, which is the open space maintenance industry, which is I do gardening in it. So say there's a worker, an employee, who prunes trees on a site and they do it badly, not in accordance with the Australian standards. Trees then die and the company cops it from the employer, and the employee who pruned the trees is also quite likely to be reprimanded. But often clients, you see, are trying to get reliable and, more importantly, cheap contractors. So there's a lot of contractors out there undercutting other contractors in order to get those clients, which means corners get cut. So they maintain their profits by squeezing as much productivity out of their workforce, winning new contracts but not hiring new workers, and somehow generating hours to cover these new contracts out of thin air. So the workers are under the pump, and there are also a lot of unqualified and undertrained workers with little oversight and training from more experienced workers. Because of course, a better educated workforce is a more expensive workforce. So we can see how under this system things go wrong. But how do they deal with it? And this is where I think a bit of example of carceral logics comes in, all right? Well, the worker gets reprimanded by the manager, of course. And that manager, who's probably a middle manager, gets reprimanded by their bosses. And then, of course, on the client side, there was likely someone employed whose job was to find the contractor and work with the contractor. So that person managing the contractor from the client side probably gets reprimanded from their bosses. So, and if also, it goes deeper, because if it's a public space and the public is unhappy with the works being done, then they're probably going to hurl abuse at the worker on site, you know, calling them a boofhead or something like that. Now, the problem is that this system only knows punishment as a way to try and correct what's going on. You know, it's no one has the imagination or will to change that system and think outside of carceral logics, of a perpetrator needing to be punished in order to correct them and the issue. And it is correct, not fix or improve or educate or learn or something compassionate. It's a system of enforcing itself and pulling people into line, and that's a system of corrections. But a system built on learning, relating to one another, stewardship of the trees rather than profit and interpersonal abuse could yield equitable and fulfilling results for everyone and help keep the best organism on the planet for carbon capture and storage alive and thriving. So that's a workplace example of carceral logics that I thought, that's how I was applying it anyway. But now I want to move on to sort of talking about kicking down fences, and both physically and metaphorically is something I talk about. We're focusing on the metaphorical now. And I think something I go on and on about is the need for more on-ramps to get people involved and realizing their own community power. That could be something as simple as getting involved in a local community struggle, like a waste incinerator, or an issue with a local public service, or, you know, it could be getting involved with a bigger movement. It could even be something as simple as joining a community garden, volunteering somewhere, or going to the local neighborhood house and getting involved. Now, I believe in that, and I preach that here on the radio, because we all started somewhere with our political beliefs and thoughts, and sometimes folks just need to dip their toes in before they can do more. And this leads me to a piece of advice, which people can take it or leave it. But, you know, I've been noticing since I've become more and more involved in activism over the years. And, you know, this is something I've been thinking about, how carceral logics informs how people approach activism and engaging with other people. You know, I think carceral logics is actually seeping in, and it's something that I also, have to be honest, have to check myself on from time to time as well. So you know, take it as something that I think that is something we can all reflect on. People have very strong positions in activism. It's often said that the left is always fighting itself and being really divided, and I think that's, you know, partly because it's lots of individuals and groups who are very strongly opinionated, educated, and passionate on their positions about how to improve and make a better society. However, the only way I know to make a better world and to change the world is to form a coalition of all those who are relatively like-minded to work together. So there's got to be respectful ways of doing this without forcing others to compromise on things that are life-saving and important. For example, in my community, the trans community, if we're to work with people but are asked to forego life-saving gender-affirming care, then that's not a good compromise. We should be able to work together and hold other individuals or groups accountable and work out resolutions that aren't punitive and respect the difference. But if a group or individual holds a view so inflexible that they start to abuse and police other people for not holding their exact same belief, then how does that help? Most activists I meet are pro-trans rights, but they're not experts on gender. For me, that's fine, as long as they are for collective liberation for everyone and broad solidarity across many groups. We have reasonable demands, I think, as a community. And, you know, if I meet another trans person and we don't share the same ideas, maybe, you know, I'm associated with one group, they're associated with another group, or they're part of an NGO or something, we should still be able to work together, you know? We both have a right to hold each other accountable when we think the other may have caused harm, but if they don't think or act the exactly same way I do, and then I bully them for it, and then I'm operating in a system of carceral logics. I'm policing, and then I'm being a cop. So, as products of a society that teaches carceral logics, let's remember to check ourselves when we're, you know, trying to invite people in, when we're trying to work towards a big picture liberation. Now, my final example of carceral logics, and this brings in restorative justice, is the awful crimes that were uncovered in childcare centres. So yes, I am going to talk about childhood sexual abuse, more the systemic things around it, not so much the details of it, but you have been warned. So firstly, the systems in place are letting those kids down. There was a Royal Commission into Institutionalized Childhood Sexual Abuse in 2010, and I'll just abbreviate now child sexual abuse into CSA. We need to look into what governments since that commission have done in response to that. People who heard my Dissociative Identity Disorder Awareness Day broadcast might remember that when I spoke to when we spoke to Dr. Kathy Kesselman, that funding had recently been pulled in a bunch of budget funding cuts last year for supports for survivors of CSA. But we also need to ask the question, and this can be applied to environmental justice, it can be applied to a broad range of issues, does carceral logics in response to these issues and carceral systems in response to these issues make the problem better or does it make it worse? By that I mean, for example, in the case of environmental issues, does creating environmental cops with bigger fines and giving more power to the state who's been letting us down with the environment make the problem better or does it make it worse? Does it fix the system? With gender-based violence, does locking up offenders and discarding them actually fix the issue? And with institutional CSA, does carceral systems and logic protect children? We live in a society with an immense amount of propaganda in all sorts of forms. A popular one is copaganda, which are crime shows, you know, Friday Night Crime on the ABC was something I used to watch with the folks growing up. You know, those Dick Wolf shows or something like that. you know, there's the bad people and then there's the good people with very few shades of grey or none at all. They're absolutely psychopaths and sociopaths and people with narcissistic personality disorder in our society who will never change. But the majority of people in carceral systems could have been prevented from doing those crimes in the first place. Children could have been protected. And restorative justice, when prevention fails, can break cycles and change cultures where these heinous crimes occur. As a survivor, I am so full of rage. I can't be in the same room as my abuser, but I would like to engage in restorative justice so I can get help with the psychological damage I've suffered. I know my abuser won't change. I want him away from children, and I want us as a society actually to deal with this issue, rather than repeat ineffective solutions and kick this can down the road. So I guess what I'm asking is, when the outrage of what is truly a heinous crime and someone who should not be allowed near children goes through the media, we've got to still think about what is effective systems change, what is effective change in changing minds, in relating to one another, into improving the safety and outcomes for vulnerable people. My challenge to you is to maybe think about how you're doing things. Think about this idea of carceral logics and think about how maybe you are thinking along those lines and challenge yourself to be a bit more imaginative, creative. Read an abolitionist book, something, to create a better society where we actually do something and protect the most vulnerable.
Slavery is back.
Welcome to a place where private business profit from a captive labour force, yet pennies are spent on medical services to a population in which the Indigenous, the poor and the mentally ill are overrepresented. Where isolation, humiliation and degradation are facts of life. Welcome to prison.
It depends who's telling the story, I suppose. The prisoners would have one view, the people who work in the prison system would have another, and I think it's up to people to decide where the truth is.
Give government propaganda and the media spin doctors the flick. And check out Doin' Time for news, views and tunes on prison issues from Guantanamo Bay to Christmas Island to prisons and detention centres everywhere. Every Monday at 4 p.m. on your community radio 3CR.
We are still fired up and we're still talking about revolution.
Freedom of Species is a show about animals, for animals, listened to by humans. Tune in Sundays, 1 p.m.
Born to be a
you're back with me. You're listening to 3CR Community Radio. We're just now going to go to another part of an interview I did with Willow Hutton on mutual aid, a conversation that we began a couple of weeks back. I hope you enjoy. Yeah, so what are some of the other things that you've been involved with or still involved with that you think might be worth hearing about for our listeners?
Yeah, if anyone's local, we do a weekly dumpster dived free market. Now that's like a play on the idea the of free the free market.
So
basically,
it's a free market.
Yes, yeah. It's really, really free.
Yeah.
The really, really free market is like a in a way, kind of like Food Not Bombs is like this global network.
Yeah.
There are lots of, anyone can set up a really, really free market.
Cool.
Ours runs quite differently to a lot of the other ones the one that used to run in Preston. A lot of them are more like about barter and exchange and making things and setting up a market. Ours is purely, or like almost purely, like we dumpster dive together on one night of the week, and then the next morning, which is on a Wednesday, set up a market that anyone can come to, and it's become about not just getting free food and, you know, getting the community together, but it has become like an event. We do free breakfast in the morning, and a lot of people are given not only free food, but a lot of people have found like a strong community of people who they can not just socialize with but rely on for other things. So that's been that's my main sort of like food mutual aid here, apart from Food Not Bombs, which is also something cool that people should look up.
No, really interesting. So that's the really, really free market.
Really free market.
Instagram or anything like that?
Yeah, we have a... so we run out of Catalyst Social Centre.
Okay, yeah. Is this the one on a Wednesday night? No, that's Food Not Bombs.
It's Food Not Bombs.
Yeah.
The two overlap a lot
to
the point where people find them indistinguishable. And we're like, no, we do the cold food, they do the hot food. But we do hot breakfast, so I guess that's...
Yeah.
It's Catalyst Social Centre. If you want to help us set up tables, it's like 10:30 on a Wednesday morning, kind of runs till like midday-ish.
Yeah.
And if you want to come like dumpster with us, message us. Mm. Can we drop links or like...
Yeah, yeah, you can drop, if you want, I can chuck them in the show notes online.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. Otherwise, head to Catalyst Social Centre and ask about it, I reckon. It's probably a good way to go about it.
That is probably the best way, yeah.
Yeah. Dumpster diving, I think people are becoming more familiar with what that is. There's a Subway near me that I desperately want to put like a little cupboard out the front of my house, because every night they throw out their foot-long rolls, and they do that because they bake it fresh every day. That's the advertisement. So there's a big plastic bag just full of rolls, and so it's like not covered in other ingredients that they've just chucked in the bag. It's just in there. So that's my tip. If you live near a Subway, hit their bins.
I hate that I love the smell of Subway.
But that shows like the food waste side of things. So say someone wanted to start a similar operation because, you know, they don't live near Catalyst. How would they go about starting it?
There are lots of local dumpster diving networks.
Depending
where people live, I suppose. I'm not sure about the best way of, like, finding people near that. It totally depends if they live in, like, a metropolitan area or... Yeah, I think, like, for us it was very easy. We literally just went dumpster diving one night. It was meant to be, like, a three-week-off thing, I think 2 or 3 years ago when we started it.
Yeah.
And it was just, like, three of us or something. We went dumpster diving, we left some shelves out, and we were like, let's do this for a few weeks over December.
Yeah.
And it just kept getting bigger and bigger, and now several years on we get, like, I don't know how many kilos of food because I'm bad at quantifying things, but lots... you'd be absolutely gobsmacked at how much you'd find in the bin.
Yeah.
How much, like, delicious freshly baked bread and packeted stuff. Also enraged. But
there's another place near me that I've gone dumpster diving, which is a cafe, which has the most delicious chocolate chip banana muffins that they also just chuck in the bag at the end of the day. And I've literally gone to this bin, opened it up and go, nom, 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 nom. Go to a dumpster diving resource if you're going to do it so you can learn about hygiene and various practices, but we won't cover that here.
We're doing workshops.
Oh, you're doing workshops?
Yeah. Message aforementioned links.
Yeah. Amazing. Okay. So dumpster diving. So has your mutual aid research expanded beyond food?
I mean, like a lot of what I was doing in the UK. So before that, I was mainly interested in like, you know, the material needs of the pandemic.
Yeah.
Like research specific, yeah. I was interested in what people needed then, which was a lot of it was like food. They needed their prescriptions picked up from the pharmacy or whatever because they were like isolating. But when I went to the UK and when I worked with this group, I became very involved in like eviction resistance.
Yeah.
And like what they call community defense.
Yeah.
So like some of it I already spoke about, like people helping one another with like bureaucratic things that they find impossible. Or
so I'm going to jump in here. So mutual aid doesn't have to be material.
Oh, no, absolutely not. Well, it...
I mean, you can make an argument that it's a bit material, it's your home, but, you know, like you're standing up for someone. That's giving a material item. You're actually just community, bolstering community.
When I first got involved in some of the eviction resistance stuff...
Yeah.
So, like, a lot of those situations were, like, people were being pushed around by their landlord.
Yeah.
And they got a few more, comrades from... Food and Solidarity involved, and they started like a case action, they call them, where there's like, you know, usually 10 or more members, usually a lot more, who will be like, right, let's either like do whatever appropriate, like picket the landlord or the real estate agent, or like
Rahu does at the moment,
which I'd love to talk about.
Yeah.
Some people were like being threatened by their landlord, and literally all they needed because they felt, you know, alone and disempowered and like defenseless. If the landlord was going to visit, people would just come in solidarity and like sit with them just in case they rocked up. I did a bit of that, and I just saw like. So many people uplifted by that was actually one of the reasons that I like became infatuated with this group. It was one of the things that I think made them so political because food, I think it's interesting because material needs like food and housing are like really, they really starkly represent the inequalities in society. So there were a way for Food and Solidarity to like create community based around material needs that went so much further.
The solidarity part.
Yeah.
You're listening to Radical Radio 3CR.
They took everyone off the streets and they did the whole arc. We fixed home was nurse, we put everyone in hotels, rah, 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 which was great. Fantastic. But at the same time, all different kinds of, you know, things going on in everyone's lives in a hotel where, you know, recipe for disaster.
And it's like, well, okay, but is that it? You fucking put me in a hotel for 5 days and then I lose my security of my squat. I come back and I can't sleep there anymore because somebody else is there. And now I have to roam around and find another place because you want me to stay in a hotel. I'm like, no. So they're not really set up to be in for an extended period of time. Very limited facilities.
In, you know, how homeless did you have to be to get access to accommodation? Did people in precarious housing count?
And at the same time, it was great because everyone's not on the street, everyone's a bit safer, but at the same time, are they safer?
And they actually moved me into what I considered a halfway house, whereas no one could come see you. You had to eat at a certain time. You had to, you couldn't have any challenges to rules.
As I mentioned, prior to the pandemic,
make any sense
I was sex working. So when lockdown happened, I was cut off from my usual source of income. However, without going into details, I was able to use the fact that I was in this self-contained apartment to my advantage, if you know what I mean.
Like, I felt amazing. I felt like I was like, you know, God, I'm in a room.
And then I got moved to City Edge with the partner. It's great. The only thing is it doesn't have a car spot. So my class is out the front and gets a fine every day. People have stolen my battery. In fact, I could sit in the lounge room area, and then where I wanted to go to bed, go into a different room. Kind of gave me that little bit more of stability. And then the cooking was just a game changer. Like, I had a fridge, I had a stove. I'm talking a fridge, I had a freezer. Like, me being like the mama bear, I would just cook everyone dinner. Like, I'd take through to everyone's room.
It improved my life by providing some unexpected income opportunities.
Hello, and you're back listening to 3CR, Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence, a show about how we live in the cities and suburbs and how we can learn to share and care for one another and our lovely, beautiful planet. I'm now joined in the studio with two guests, one former guest, David Border-Giles. Hi, David.
Hello.
And Sonia Lieber.
Hi, Amy. Nice to be here.
Hi. And we just, what did we, before the music, I should say, that was myself with Willow Hutton, PhD student of David's, actually. and that was us sort of talking about the mutual aid endeavors that Willow's in. I'll be uploading the full conversations as a separate conversation online, but I'll keep playing bits of it throughout the week. I have David and Sonia in with me. We just heard a piece by Sonia and her partner David Cheswick, which uses, people may remember, Homeless in Hotels, a wonderful podcast and show produced here at 3CR by Kelly Whitworth and Spike. And so that was audio segments from the archive for local positioning systems, and that track was called Hotels. So David and Sonia, why are we here today? Why are you in my studio?
Well, we have found a place to extend this project that's happening in a few weeks' time for Open House Melbourne.
Oh, exciting.
We found a place in North Melbourne, mm-hmm. Known as the Victorian Quakers Centre. Mm. And we're really attracted to that space for a number of reasons.
Yeah.
Quakers themselves are very interesting and curious.
Yes, the founder of the Quakerism you're talking about, because there's two, it was known as the Universal Public Friend, and did not want to be referred by he or she pronouns, and was either referred to as the friend or they them pronouns way back a couple hundred years ago. So people, they them pronouns have a history.
Well, I love learning new things about the Quakers. And yeah. I've decided if anyone asks me anything about the Quakers, I'm just going to say it's just so, they're so unpin-downable,
yep.
in a way. But what really interested us was this space they've got in North Melbourne. They've got actually a kind of a redesigned listening space, because a lot of their philosophy and their practice is about sitting together and listening. And the space itself has this kind of overhead portal to the world that's like infused with intense colors and light, and under that space they set up a circle of chairs,
yep.
and part of their weekly, possibly more than weekly practice is to sit together in silence. But yep. in terms of what we're doing for Open House is we're using what you've just heard and expanded aspects of that, more detail, more voices in a more expressive soundscape that you can go and visit and hang out in, you know, a few beanbags, a few chairs, and just, and like be in a space that's kind of dedicated to listening.
And are people going to speak up as they move to speak like the Quakers do, or is this just more of a social event?
we shall see. We do have two surprises.
Yeah.
We've invited some friends who've got some interesting lived experience that are going to come forth.
Yeah.
I guess, yes, and people are welcome. And, yeah, that space. The great thing is it's an architecture that generates a kind of a mindfulness and thinking about, people in a contained space, but you're also thinking about the world.
Yeah, and I believe Kelly and Spike are involved in this as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the overall installation is called Local Positioning Systems, and that involves a few different elements. So in addition to installing this, the soundscape made of interviews from homeless in hotels, we'll also have a panel discussion on the Saturday of the open house weekend. So that's Saturday from 2 to 3 p.m.
Yeah.
I've got the title for that here. The panel discussion, which Spike and Kelly will be co-facilitating, participating in, along with a couple of other experts and people with lived experience of homelessness. That's called Security Surveillance and the Street, the recent criminalization of homelessness in Melbourne.
Mm.
And so we've got the panel where we'll have people talking about and trying to give some context to not just homelessness, but homelessness in Melbourne and the ways in which it's been criminalized or subject to carceral logics.
Yes.
which we were just talking about before. And then the other element is a participatory drawing installation as well.
Yeah.
And that's just called Drawing Home. That'll also be downstairs. And that allows just anyone off the street to come in and make their visual contribution. And that piece is about sort of thinking about your own relationship to housing, your own relationship to housing deprivation, which is my preferred term for homelessness.
Mm. Could you expand on that?
Yeah, well, when you think of homeless or homelessness, it often just conjures up a set of, stereotypes and images.
Yeah.
And those stereotypes and images often draw a line. It's othering, right?
Yes,
it draws a line. And you imagine that the homeless are this group that are not, unless you have lived experience, you might imagine they're a group that's not you, which of course isn't true. We're all, we're all in some, even if you're well compensated, you're probably in some sort of tense relationship with the housing system.
Absolutely.
The banks, etc. Yeah. So we all experience varying degrees of housing privilege.
Yeah.
And any of us could, in the right circumstances, end up experiencing housing deprivation.
Absolutely, yep.
So it's one of those think about things in terms of systems rather than individuals kind of ways of framing things.
Yeah.
So the Drawing Home exhibition asks people to think about their own experience and record, document our various experiences of homelessness. The panel brings some experts together to kind of give some context and history. And then the soundscape, of course, is sort of immersive and allows you to sort of sit with the voices of people who went through lockdown, who were unhoused under lockdown, etc. Yeah.
Amazing. And so how many days is this running over again?
It's actually a little bit different to the open house
dates
in that it's on the Friday and the Saturday.
Yep.
So instead of the open house is the Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
So it's just Friday, Saturday for that.
Yep. Because
for
Quakers need it on the Sunday.
Mm,
for
of course.
Very important Sunday gathering.
Yep. Yep.
So the 25th and 26th of this month.
Yes. Okay. And I'll be there. I'll be recording some of those panel discussions. Anyone listening who's into these issues, which I think is a massive amount of 3CR listeners, I think it's going to be a really exciting, worthwhile exhibition. I thought we might take a little break just and have a bit of a listen to one of the excerpts. What excerpt would you like me to play, Sonia?
I think the last excerpt is good because, again, it sort of focuses on the system and, some insights.
Yep, sounds good.
I believe that space should be reclaimed, particularly for housing. I think that the COVID-19 public health response raised some really interesting questions and highlighted some contradictions.
You know, at the start of COVID, the state was talking about responding to COVID-19 explicitly as a sort of war response. You know, I find this really problematic and sinister language.
Because, I mean, any war within a community, you know, leads to outcomes that always increase resources for police and military.
You know, recognise that these attitudes are ultimately like a result of living in this kind of
explicitly unfair capitalist society, you know?
I regret not having to deal with those issues of movement control and illegality of movement, which, you know, is something, you know, we as involved in activism have thought about these things before, you know? You know, it was great practice for the state, right? Fucking training for them on how they would do things.
Tune in to the Beyond the Bars prison broadcast during NAIDOC Week 2025. Listen to 3CR each weekday at 11 a.m. from Monday the 7th through to Friday the 11th of July. We'll be taking you inside six Victorian prisons: Dame Philip Frost Centre, Barwon Prison, Fulham Correctional Centre, Middleton Prison, Marguerite Correctional Centre and Port Phillip Prison. We'll be connecting with culture and community. There'll be stories, songs, opinions and poems from the men and women inside. The shows will be live on 3CR 855 on your AM dial, 3CR digital and streaming via our website or on the Community Radio Plus app. Head to the website 3cr.org.au/beyondthebars2025 for more information.
And you're back listening to 3CR 855 on your dial or on the Community Radio Plus app or online at 3cr.org.au. I'm chatting with David and Sonia about a interesting open house and event that's happening, which was, I had it up. What was the broad name again? It's Local Positioning Systems. Yes, and it's at the Victoria Quakers Centre. And it's connected to a previous show by Spike and Kelly called Homeless in Hotels. And you just heard another excerpt from the sound, from the soundscape that will be there. And that one was State Responses. And now I'm going to ask Sonia. And David's your partner, correct?
David Chesworth and I work together.
And so, so tell me a little bit about this creative experience. What was it like digging into the Homeless in Hotels archive and using that as your inspiration to create these sound excerpts? And were you also involved with the lights and the design as well, or...?
Oh, the architects did it a few years ago.
It's
Navanya Reed Architects. They worked a lot with the Quakers in getting space just right for the Quakers. We got approached by Deakin University because Deakin does a lot of research around... home, housing, deprivation and, David, who's sitting next to me, David Giles, is, one of the researchers there.
Yes.
And, Kelly Whitworth and Spike are, parallel researchers in that as well. So that they bring together like a whole bunch of people. But David and I are independent artists and we work in video and sound.
Yes.
And some people know David through his music. We were approached by Deakin. We got a phone call, which is all really nice whether we'd want to make something with the archive. Because what can happen is that you can get a whole bunch of recordings and a lot of really great work goes into that going out, Spike and Kelly and David Border-Giles did, interviewing people. And then it gets made into, you know, a podcast, Homeless in Hotels, and it gets, you know, shown on 3CR, which is really great. But then there's also an archive that can be used in different ways, you know, because there's so many different points of entry into that archive and different ways. So it's interesting, like, for us as artists to be given something like that, because we don't want to make it too overly aesthetic. Like, it has aesthetic moments, you know, like you might have heard these kind of expressive moments where people kind of, you know, we stack the voices we kind of have this kind of chorus of, you know, certain themes that come through. And there's some kind of energetic, there's energies that we create in the soundscape to sort of, you know, keep you, you know, supporting, you know, the voices. It's frankly like really great for us. There's so much to learn from first person testimony, and it's really great to have first person testimony there at the fore, you know, at the forefront of all this. So, I mean, as you know,
sorry to jump in, but I felt like listening to your excerpts before the show that it was like, You capture the destabilizing sensations and feelings of this experience, because housing deprivation is not just a physical and material thing. It's an awful thing to someone's mental health. And there's often a lot of people who have pre-existing mental health conditions who are housing deprived. I'm trying to take up the term, David. I kind of get that sense, particularly when you're talking about the voices all going over each other and stuff. I'm like, I feel destabilized, like, you know, like the stress of it. And
well,
everything.
this feeling of kind of getting the rug pulled out from under you and how to navigate changes. And I guess we all learn different things from listening to it. But one of the things that really struck me was how people who are living on the streets have already set up their own peer support and, you know, support networks that might involve one or more aspects of their lives. And then the fact that they were told to go into hotels during the COVID pandemic meant that they could so quickly lose all those networks. Like just days and hours, you know.
That's why I played Hotels, because it has a few examples of exactly just that.
I mean, one thing that got just dropped out of the public narrative completely in that time, and one of the reasons we felt so committed to documenting what was happening right then, was the public narrative was it was this kind of polished story about how we solved homelessness, or look, we've housed all these people overnight. And so you didn't hear about the fact that at the same time it was a sort of carrot stick affair where homelessness also became illegal overnight. And then people were sort of warehoused in these places that were not necessarily fit for purpose.
With a security detail.
Yeah.
Like a little bit with a company who provides prison guards.
So it was the hotels, for some people, were a godsend, and for some people were a little bit like, you know, slightly prison-like. And I just wanted to say how much fun it is to hear someone else reinvent, or sort of not reinvent, but reimagine something that you've spent a long time doing. You know, so Spike and Kelly did the production, but I was closely involved with the recording. And when you're doing a radio documentary, or as an academic, when I'm writing, you know, academic articles based on the research, you have to present it a certain way, and you have a kind of, you know, you have one set of responsibilities to present people's voices in a certain way. And when it's in the context of an artistic installation, like a soundscape, some of the things that you're able to do to bring out, like, the mood or the emotional elements allow us to hear the same voices in a new way. So I hope people will go to the installation, be inspired in one way, and then go and listen to Homeless in Hotels.
Yes.
And you know, hear it in both those contexts.
Amazing. And just curious, out of curiosity, Sonia, what other projects have you worked on in the past?
Ah, well, we do mainly video installations,
yeah.
And we do a lot through residencies, and a lot of that sort of means we don't always get to choose,
pick and choose where we go,
like what opportunities are available. But most recently we did a residency in Townsville worked with a whole bunch of scientists who were exploring animals and creatures in the environment. And one creature I will mention is the microbat. Because we worked with a microbat scientist, and our focus is on sound.
Yes.
So the project was called Shapes of Listening. So it was different ways you can use technology to listen to creatures in the environment.
And that was with David as well?
Yeah.
So is there somewhere that people can follow you and David's work or find out?
Yeah, mainly through the website. Yep. Yeah.
And what website is that?
Oh, that's lieberandchesworth.com. Yes, Sonia Lieber and David Chesworth.
Oh, yeah, I might follow you there and maybe have you on again when something interesting comes up.
Cool.
You know?
Yeah, great.
Because, actually, I did some interviews with Wildlife Victoria. And so one of the themes on this show is our impact. You know, the urbanized world is... got many themes and its impact on the environmental world. But one thing that we don't do in our urbanized lives is live with nature. We dominate it or get rid of it. And of course, we mess up ecosystems while we do that. And the microbats are a great example because Victoria, not even just in the urban environment, but also in its woeful reputation with forestry and logging, we might lose them in my lifetime.
Well, microbats, you can't hear them and you can't see them.
Yeah.
And you can actually hold 20 of them in the palm of your hand. They're not microscopic or anything like that, but they are very small creatures that guard themselves really closely. They live in caves. They only go out at night and they do a lot of pollination, of course. Mm. Different to our friends down at Yarra Bend, of course. The flying foxes. Yeah. But that's...
Thank you so much. And so, David, we have some nuts and bolts to talk about.
Well, websites that I want to make sure people have heard. Mainly... The point is that, you know, these things are collaborations between a range of people. So there's, you know, David and Sonia's artistic installation. Also, the drawing installation is by Simon Grennan and Ilona Jetmar. They're two Deakin artists as well.
Yeah.
And then there's, you know, Spike and Kelly's good work with Homeless in Hotels. And I was there too.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's all of those folks. And I should talk about Vivian Gerrand, who's another Deakin researcher who did at least one of the interviews that shows up in the in the project. So, you know, there's a bunch of people involved in producing the material, and also there's a bunch of people involved in bringing those folks together. So I really should acknowledge our collaborators. So there's the Public Exchange Bureau, which is a Deakin project that brings artists and academics together. Their whole job is to... find new ways of communicating research. So they bring academic researchers together with artists like Sonia and David.
Yeah.
So Public Exchange Bureau or PEB. Mm. And then there's the Deakin Home. It's got a clumsy appellation. It's a Strategic Research and Innovation Centre.
And that's your part of that.
SRIC. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. But we just call it Home.
Yeah.
So if you look for Home Deakin,
yep.
That's a research centre that does research all about how to better home us, you know, physically, like bricks and mortar, also socially, to make sure we create inclusive communities.
Yeah.
So, you know, people should go and visit homelessinhotels.net. They should also look for the Deakin Home Research Centre, and they should also look for the Public Exchange Bureau, and they should go to Sonia and David's website.
Yes.
And yeah, so like local positioning systems is this constellation of a lot of people making a thing happen, which is really nice.
Yeah. And let's also just for one last time get all the information about how we can attend it, when we can attend it, and where we can find out more information.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can go to the Open House Melbourne website and look for local positioning systems at the Victorian Quakers Centre. Or you can just, if you know where the Quakers Centre is, or you can... you can find it on the internet, or you can just remember that I've told you, 484 William Street. You can just rock up there. on
Friday. When we're open.
Yes.
yeah. Otherwise, it might be a bit difficult.
We're there from on Friday, the 25th of July, from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m., and then on Saturday, the 26th of July, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. The panel discussion's at 2, but there are other live things happening sporadically throughout that day as well. So rock up many times, please.
Yeah. that's exciting. And it's an accessible venue?
It is.
Yep. And will there be any refreshments or anything like that? Right? No refreshments. So bring your own water bottles and stuff like that.
Yep, bring it in your tummy.
Yep. Cool. and is there any, like, are you aware of any, like, local public transport that might be close by?
It's really close to the Vic Market.
Oh, okay.
So
perfect.
Even though it's in West Melbourne, I'm a tram from Flinders Street or that station that I never go to in the loop that I can't remember the name of.
Oh, good.
Near the courts there.
It's about 7 minute walk from Flagstaff.
Yeah, that's the one.
And it's about 2 blocks from the 58, 58 tram.
Yep. Oh, okay, awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you both for coming in and telling us about this event. I'm really excited to go and see it and do all those recordings.
We're excited to have you.
Yeah. you've been listening to 3CR. Till your lawn and kick your fence at 3CR 855 AM. You can listen back to the show at 3cr.org.au/killyourlawn. And yeah, don't forget to check us out on Instagram. Did you have an Instagram as well?
You can find David Border Giles on Instagram, and it's mostly just my photographs.
Yep. And there was a Homeless in Hotels Instagram.
Homeless in Hotels is the one to find.
Yes. Amazing. So stay tuned for Think Again. Don't forget, at 11 o'clock, we have the Beyond the Bars broadcast, the last day of the broadcast going from Port Phillips Prison. It's been an amazing week as usual. Happy NAIDOC week, and see you in a fortnight's time.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank
you.
This is Junior Brother No Snitch.
Ducky water freezing in the season of the drought. Out of water, back to bail again. The ordinary day, only the moon pull a body in. Never asked for, nor neither refused. Happiness like nausea comes and goes. Though the text is written, there is error in the prose. I led you forever for what you've done. I'll hate you forever. I'll hate you forever for what you do. Across a distance cannot be measured by hand. Letters unanswered ocean, the water and the sand. Never ask for, no need to refuse. Let alone the garden do again, I can't get through. Happiness like trauma comes and goes. Though the text is written, there is error in the prose. I let you forever for what you've done. I'll hate you forever. I'll hate you forever for what you've done. Thank you.
Now I am angry, God knows why. God knows lots of things, but God's no snitch. God's no snitch, yeah. Now I'm fucking angry, heaven knows why. Heaven knows lots of things, but God's no snitch. God's no snitch, no, no, I am angry. Forever, I'll hate you forever. 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 I'll hate you forever.
Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.